Each side gets a third period goal, but the Hurricanes emerge as 4-1 winners in this one here tonight.
4-1 the final. Carolina puts it to the Predators last night. Fireball Hot Take Friday. Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello.
So we've got last night's game, which is what we're going to start on. 4-1 final, and I want to know how we're supposed to feel about it. That's the question. How are we supposed to feel about it? Because I think there's two ways you can look at a game like yesterday's, right? One thing I don't like doing, and this is a little bit of a backstory, but hockey was not as popular in Nashville as it is now. Shockingly, a Stanley Cup final run will do that. But when I first started here, I always felt like I was put into situations where I would hear people say, it's a big game tonight, big game for the Predators, big game. It's the St. Louis Blues. It's the Chicago Blackhawks. It's the Dallas Stars. It's Winnipeg Jets, big game today. Then they'd lose, and after they'd lose, people would act like, well, yeah, it's only one game. Yeah, that's one game. I don't do that. I don't sell something as a really big game as I did at the start of the show yesterday and then turn around after a 4-1 loss and say, eh, it's one game. You move on. It's Carolina. That's what it was. So I think we need to take a look at last night's game, and I think we need to then decide what is the importance of last night's game. And I think I'm going to leave that up to you guys. So 615-737-1025 on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Ian, you can release the hounds. We will start on this. Last night, the Predators got beat 4-1. That doesn't look very good. The first period, I thought it felt like a legitimate playoff game. It felt like a heavyweight fight. Two teams going at one another, punch, counterpunch. Preds got close on a couple of chances. Carolina got close on a couple of chances. Carolina pots one home before the end of the period. That's going to happen. The second period and the third period, I felt like the Carolina Hurricanes were the best team in the Central Division, and I felt like the Nashville Predators were a bubble team. When you looked at the stats, it wasn't that bad. Preds outshot 29-20. They were even in hits. The Predators were better in the faceoff circle. But then you start looking at aggressive stats. Blocked shots. Carolina blocked more, 11-7. Takeaways. Carolina took it away more. Giveaways. Carolina gave it away more. Why is that a big deal? Because last night, I felt like after Carolina got the lead, and specifically the second goal, which I attribute to Ryan Ellis, surprise, surprise, when Carolina scored the second goal to go up 2-0, they put it on the Predators. They were the aggressors last night. It felt like in the middle, or really the start of the second period to the middle of the third period, I don't even know how many shots the Predators got. Once Carolina realized that they were the better team, or at least once they felt like they were the better team, they put the pedal to the metal. They were more aggressive. They blocked more shots. They took the puck away more. And yeah, they were maybe a little bit more careless with the puck, but they did take care of the Predators. They didn't embarrass them. They didn't dominate them. They didn't make me think it's the end of the season now that they lost. But Carolina at full strength, missing Tara Vinen, who's a pretty good player, versus the Predators, who very clearly are not at full strength. Carolina's the better hockey club. They have a better record. They have better star players. They maybe have a better coach. They're the better team. And if that's who you play in the first round of the playoffs, last night is, I believe, an indication of what you're looking to have to overcome. Chris Mason said it last night on the broadcast after the game on Bally Sports now. Chris Mason said after the game that kind of shows you even the high the Predators are on kind of puts you in your place when you think about them compared to the Carolina Hurricanes.
They come back. It's almost full circle. You're going to have a little bit of a humble pie going against. That's the best hockey team I've seen in a long time. And Hal, I don't want to steal what you said in the intermission to us, but you said that's what we're used to doing to teams right now. We pressure them. We come back. We reload. We don't let them get past center ice, and we go back and attack. And I thought the Preds played well in the first period. Hal, you were talking about that during the break. Could have been a different game early if they had been able to score.
And it could have been a different game early. And the Predators had their chance. There was the one puck that went up in the air, and Mrazek realized it at the last second right before it got behind him and ended up in the back of the net. Again, I don't look at last night's game and say, you can't beat the Carolina Hurricanes in a playoff series because they beat you 4-1. But it was a little eye-opening. as Chris Mason said, it was a little bit of a piece of humble pie last night. So I'm not going to leave it up to me today about what this means, because we got it all on Tuesday, or I should say on Wednesday, after Tuesday night's game against Tampa Bay, when they spanked Tampa Bay 7-2 with a backup goalie. And people said, what do you think now, Jared? You wanted to sell, and now they beat Tampa Bay, and now they show you what you're capable of. I'm not going to turn this back around and say, well, now they lost to Carolina, who, by the way, if the playoffs started today, this is who you would play. So now you see why I wanted to trade, because clearly they're not as good as Carolina. I'm not going to say that, because I don't believe that. After last night's game. I mean, I think I believe it in general, but I don't believe it just based upon watching last night's game. But I will say this. I thought the Predators played okay last night. Okay's not going to cut it. If you want to make the playoffs, that's the first step, making the playoffs. And then the second step is actually doing something in them. If you want to make the playoffs, playing okay is probably not going to cut it. And here's why. Again, last night I thought they played okay. Here's why playing okay is not going to cut it. Because in your next five and Dallas's next eight, which would set up a May 1st meeting between the Predators and the Dallas Stars, your schedule looks like this. At Carolina, Chicago, Chicago, Florida. Two playoff teams and a third in Chicago who, quite frankly, has outplayed you when you've played them. You've just had great goaltending. If the Chicago Blackhawks are going to make a run at it, and right now their percent chance of making the playoffs is 6.3 according to Money Puck, if the Chicago Blackhawks are going to make a run at this, they're going to probably have to take 2 out of 3, if not 3 out of 3 from you. So you're going to get their best game. Here's Dallas's schedule in their next 8 games before, again, they play you again on May 1st. Both teams would be caught up in games played. Columbus at home, Detroit at home, Detroit at home, at Detroit, Carolina, Carolina, at Tampa Bay. So they will get Carolina, they will get Tampa Bay, but there's a lot of Detroit. They beat Columbus last night 4-1. Those odds yesterday where the Predators were at 62% of making the playoffs are down to 55.3. A 50-50 shot of making the playoffs. Again, I thought last night's game was okay. Do they have injury issues? Absolutely. They're going to need Philip Forsberg back. They're going to need Ellie Tolvanen back. They're going to need Matt Duchene back. They're going to need Dante Fabro and Alexander Carrier back at some point. And it is a different team when those guys are on the ice. But we just saw what the gold standard right now in this division is in Carolina. And if the Predators are going to compete with them tomorrow night, if they're going to compete with them in a playoff series, or if they're going to make the playoffs, a game like last night's is not good enough. It was okay. Wasn't bad. I'm not mad at the coach. I'm not mad at the players. I'm not mad. But it's got to be better. If they're going to do anything that they think they're capable of doing, they have to play better. So again, I start with the question today of this. What did last night's game mean to you? What was the importance of last night's game? Knowing how good Carolina is, knowing the potential ramifications of playing them in a playoff series. 615-737-1025. Calls and texts, that's our number, 615-737-1025. Caroline Fenton, what did you make of last night's game?
So yesterday we said we couldn't be too hurt by a loss, but I said that I needed to see something at least convincing, at least a convincing loss. And in that first period, the Predators played really well. I thought they were playing above what we've seen from the Preds before. But they just looked gassed in those second and third periods. And I think they were really hurting on their power plays. And if the Predators want to continue to win games and to continue to win games when they matter against teams that are really good, such as Carolina and Tampa Bay, you have to take advantage of those power plays. I think last night, especially in power play situations and in the offense as a whole, the Predators were really missing Philip Forsberg and Ellie Tolvanen.
So, I mean, I think we can sit back and we can say, okay, you know, no team that loses its best two forwards on the power play is going to be able to have the kind of night they want on the power play. But I thought that was the whole thing about what this team's been doing is we haven't been making excuses. You know, we haven't been looking at the guys who aren't here.
They also haven't been playing the Carolina Hurricanes. Now, you've been playing the Detroit Red Wings. You've been playing the Chicago Blackhawks. You have not been playing the best team in the NHL Central.
And I will tell you what does make me a little worried. Tampa Bay played their best goalie on Saturday night. You lost 3-0. Now, Carolina's kind of got a 1A, 1B. I think James Reimer kind of sucks. But they've got James Reimer and they've got Peter Mrazek. And Peter Mrazek, for whatever reason, I don't know how this guy doesn't win the Vezina every year, because every time I watch him play the Predators, he absolutely shuts them down. So those are the two goalies you're going to have to beat if you make it to the playoffs. And against those goalies, you haven't beaten them. You haven't beaten Vasilevskiy this year. You have not beaten Mrazek. So those are the two guys you're going to have to beat if you play them in a playoff series. I think that's probably a little concerning. I guess I'm trying to be fair here. If you really think about it, they played two games against Tampa Bay. They lost Saturday. They won Tuesday. If you want to discredit the Tuesday win because McElhaney was in net and not Vasilevskiy, you can do that on your own. But I'm just saying, they played two games with Tampa Bay. They went 1-1. They played last night against Carolina. They lost. Oh, can we look at this like it's almost like a four-game series where, hey, in a four-game series, if you lose on Saturday and then you are now 1-3 against those good teams, does that not then make you look in the mirror and say, okay, like, are the Predators really going to be capable of doing something in the playoffs? I mean, are we thinking about the playoffs when we look at last night's game and we look at how they played Saturday against Tampa Bay? Are we equating that to, well, if you can't play with Carolina, because in the second period last night, you could not play with them. They were too good. Whether it was Sebastian Aho or Dougie Hamilton or Trocheck or whomever, you could not play with them last night in the second and kind of first half of the third period. Are we equating that to a playoff series? Are we equating that to a playoff game?
I think you definitely could, because you are going to be seeing one of those two teams most likely in the playoffs in the first round. So you do kind of have to approach these games as pre-playoff games. But I think the most important thing right now for the Predators is making the playoffs. If you miss out on these points against Carolina, it is absolutely so important to get those points against Chicago. So let's just say moving forward, let's say if the Predators drop the second game against Carolina, you are going to be in a really, really tough spot facing Chicago. So I think first and foremost, focus on making the playoffs, and then you can start to approach these games as, okay, the Predators lost 3 out of 4, right? Yes, lost 3 out of 4. What next?
So I don't want to get into the what next thought right now, because, I mean, I thought the whole premise of this week was hope that you can have a shot at this. I mean, the one thing that they set themselves up for is if they don't make the playoffs, it's an unmitigated failure. I almost
that
felt like
absolute worst case scenario.
I felt like the one thing David Poile didn't do was he didn't help out John Hines on Monday, because if you traded guys and then you made the playoffs, and Adam Vingan said on this show that Mikhail Granlund was not going to be the factor as to whether or not they made the playoffs. But if you made the playoffs, if you traded guys and you made the playoffs, I mean, they'd be ready to put John Hines up on their shoulders and carry him off the ice. But now you're telling everybody, no, we believe in this group. We think this group is good enough to compete. So we want to go see how it plays out. Well, if it plays out with you not making the playoffs and the Dallas Stars making it over you, then I think we're going to look back and people are going to be disappointed because they got their hopes up this week because the team told them to get their hopes up. So I'm with you. Making the playoffs is obviously the most important thing. But, I mean, I'm kind of operating, like, the way that I'm thinking about this season is so different after Monday because of what they have told me to think, which is they think they're going to make the playoffs and they think they've got a shot to compete in the playoffs. That is the crux of the disagreement between the Adam Vingans, the Mark Howards, me, you, and them, is that I didn't think they could compete in the playoffs. And I'm not saying last night's game is a shining example that they can't, but I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried that if Saturday night's game plays out the same way that last night's game played out, I'm a little worried that, yeah, you can play hard. You can be aggressive. You make a mistake here or there, but it's not the end of the world. But you do that against Tampa Bay, you lose 3-0 against their top goalie on Saturday. You play Peter Mrazek, you play this Carolina team, and I'm just telling you, and I know Stamkos was out, and I know Kucherov isn't back yet, I thought Carolina last night was better than Tampa Bay either of the two nights that they played them. I mean, that is concerning if you're thinking about the ability to win a playoff series. So we're off and running. 615-737-1025. Calls and texts on this Fireball Hot Take Friday. Your reaction to last night's game. What was the significance of the loss? Was there any significance of the loss? Do you want to play the, well, you know, it's only one game. It's a 56-game season. It's only one game. You can do that. 615-737-1025. There is one thing that's going to sound like excuse-making, and I get it, but I think I'll be honest. I think it's very evident to me after last night's game that the Predators have to think of something, and I think they're going to try it. We'll get to that coming up next. Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Hey, every weekday game, Robbie and Rex Road, you'll have the opportunity to participate in Preds Click to or Pick to Click, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka at 8:45 every weekday game. Preds Pick to Click is presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, and you can win a prize pack from our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka. So be excited about your chance to pick and to click. Stillman and Company. Right here, CSPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Brought in by Aho and played away. Here now is Haula breaking in behind the D. He scores! Eric Haula, his second shorthanded goal of the year. And the Predators are on the board.
Hey, Coach, you had your chances. You get one tonight, but Carolina on the right side of things. How would you assess your team's performance in this one?
I thought we got off to a good start in the game. Had a good first period, hit some posts, had the power play. I thought we had chances to get up early in the game in the first period. I didn't think we responded really well at the after the end of the first period goal against and into the second. I think sometimes you credit the opponent too. I thought they played much better than we did in the second period, just on top of us, our puck execution. You know, we couldn't get up and get going. We got half iced in that period. And then, you know, they were, I'd say they were the better team in the second and third period.
I would agree with John Hines. They were the better team last night in the second and in the third period. And I would say that for the most part, they're probably the better team. I mean, if you get the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round of the playoffs, you will be a decided underdog. And I think we all know that. And I think we all look back to 2017 and we say, hey, you know, that's kind of the point of the NHL playoffs, decided underdog. Last year, the top two teams in the West in the play-in bubble, Edmonton and Nashville, both got beaten by Chicago and by Arizona. I mean, two teams that would not have made the playoffs, that should not have made the playoffs, but you had the little play-in bubble, and both of those two teams lost. So upsets are kind of a hallmark of the playoffs. You'd have to bank on that a little bit. I'm not an excuse maker, Caroline, but one thing I would say is if you're going to compete with a team like that, and I think we saw it on Saturday night when they just couldn't score against Andre Vasilevsky in Tampa Bay, but they're going to need Philip Forsberg back in the lineup. They're going to need Ellie Tolvanen back in the lineup. They're going to need Matt Duchene back in the lineup. They're going to need Dante Fabro back in the lineup. They're going to need Alexander Carrier back in the lineup. That's a Carolina team. That's a really good team. They were missing Tevu Teravainen last night. He's a really good player, but the rest of that team is pretty loaded. And if you're going to go up and you're going to compete with a team that's better than you, you're going to need guys that can score goals. I mean, you're going to need your top-end forwards, and that includes Duchene. The other thing is they're going to need the defense back. And I know Carrier probably comes back right at the end of the year. Fabro's week to week, so who knows about that. But, I mean, Ian has been talking about this off the air for a while, and I don't want to throw Ian under the bus for this. But, Ian, you've been pretty solid in your feelings towards Ben Harper and Jeremy Davies. And last night
was a rough one for those two guys.
Those guys sucked last night. I mean, those guys are not, I mean, look, they're not good. And eventually the not good players, like, it's fun, right? When Freddie Gaudreau scores a big goal for you in a Stanley Cup final game. It's fun when Pontus Aberg has a game winner in the Western Conference final. Like, it's fun, but you can't really build your brand off of it. Chicago, when they won their cups, it was because of Taves and Kane and Keith. Pittsburgh, when they won their cups, it's because of Crosby and Malkin. Washington won their cup because of Alexander Ovechkin. Like, that's how you build your team, and that's how you win. So if they're ever going to have any chance against a team like this, they're either going to have to get incredibly puck lucky, amazingly hot goaltending, or they're going to need to get their guys back, and they're going to need to get talented forwards that can score the puck on the ice, and they're going to need to have competent defensemen. Because, as Chris Mason pointed out on the postgame show last night, it didn't take Rod Brind'Amour long to figure out how to attack Harper and Davies.
I thought Rod Brind'Amour did a good job of, you know, maybe exploiting Harper and Davies out there a little bit. They got Aho and Trocheck out against them, and it creates a little bit of a mismatch, puts them in a tough situation, especially in that second period. You know, they got hemmed out there. It's tough to get that change. Carolina's got no weakness. You know, they're one of the best skating teams, I think, top to bottom. Their D move that puck, and their forwards, it's full speed, and they just come through that neutral zone so cleanly. I just think they got beat by a better team tonight. I'll be very curious to see how they respond next game against Carolina, because they'll make some adjustments.
And they're going to have to. And they're going to need to get some dudes back. And one thing I think we're going to see is I think they're going to put Philip Tomasino in the lineup tomorrow night. And I think they're going to do it because I think they know they need talented goal scorers. They need talented players with the puck on their stick. Desperate times call for desperate measures. I think that may be why we see Tomasino if we see him tomorrow night. Time now to take a look at the phones. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Caroline is on the text line. What do we have, Caroline?
One texter asks, what is going to happen if the Preds don't make the playoffs? What's that response going to look like?
So I don't know what the answer to that is. You know, I can tell you what I would do if I owned the team. I can't tell you what they will do that own the team because I don't know. I don't know. Like, is this a make or break for Poile? I don't know. Is this a, hey, you know, we really felt good about the second half of the year. We really like our young guys. Let's let our older guys go off. I mean, I was reading Adam Vingan's article in The Athletic. There's a lot of dudes that need new contracts this offseason. I mean, David Poile made it pretty clear he plans to re-sign Matthias Ekholm. Now, again, are the Predators going to let David Poile make that decision? I don't know. I don't know what his job security level is. But they're ultimately going to have to get the money to re-sign Forsberg. That'll cost you more. Re-sign Ekholm, which they say right now they want to do. That'll cost you more. They've got to sign Fabro to a contract. They've got to sign Tolvanen to a contract. They've got to sign Saros to a contract. I mean, this is not – I'm not one to sit here and play off-season preview show because they lost on a Thursday night to Carolina. But there is a lot of stuff to figure out when you get into the offseason if you don't make the playoffs, including what is the fate of the general manager? Does he stay? Does he go? I think everybody in Nashville media thinks he stays. But that doesn't mean he should. And so I don't know what they're going to do in that regard. What else is in the text line?
Another texter said, making the playoffs is secondary for me. Seeing the rookies play is way more important. We've got to watch what we have on the farm.
So I think that would be an interesting case to put Tomasino in there. And I think it would be also an interesting case maybe to put Tyler Lewington and David Ferentz back in the lineup tomorrow night. Certainly Harper and Davies are not getting it done. I can live with Harper. Davies, I can't. I mean, I think they need to put Tyler Lewington back in there. I think they need to put David Ferentz back in there. I don't think Ian can live with Ben Harper out there. That's just me. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Ian. But
well, at least he can bring some size, you know. But, man, he had a rough – last night was one of his rougher games, I would say.
I mean, they really – that pair was awful last night. I mean, I went into the season and I said I didn't have any expectations this season. And what I meant by that, I think some people got mad when I said that. When I said I didn't have any expectations, it meant that, you know, making the playoffs wasn't, to the texter's point, making the playoffs wasn't the end of the world for me. It wasn't what absolutely positively had to happen. I was more of the mindset, okay, let's see if the young players can play. Let's see which of these core guys belong. You know, like, is Ryan Ellis really a core piece? I think there's a big question mark there. You know, is Ryan Johansson a core piece? I think we now kind of know what Ryan Johansson is. I think Matt Duchene gets one more chance before we decide kind of what he really is. But I wanted to see that. I wanted to see, could the coach coach? I feel like we have our answer in that regard. Can Saros be a number one goalie? I think we're trending towards our answer. And that, like, those things matter to me more than making the playoffs. I will agree with the text or that. But once you decide not to trade Mikhail Granlund or Eric Halla or Nick Cousins or anybody, and you really say, hey, I believe in my group, then you kind of have to make the playoffs. Like, it's kind of a big deal that you make the playoffs. So I think their actions on Monday maybe make my desire for them to make the playoffs stronger, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And Kyle texted in and said, I feel like the Preds can't overcome a hot goalie with this current lineup, whereas teams such as Carolina and Tampa Bay have the skill to overcome a hot goalie. And I think I agree with him. I mean, what we saw last night, Carolina was just able to adjust and overcome on the fly. And I think that that's something that the Predators have been struggling with as of late.
So I think the question is, you know, can Saros steal every game? And the answer is no. I mean, they played Dallas 2 weeks ago on a Thursday night where Saros wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. And I think they lost 3-0 or something like that. And those are the kind of games where, you know, he can steal the next night against Chicago. You don't play very well. He can steal that game, but he's not going to steal every game. And the games he's stealing against Dallas and Chicago, he's probably not going to be able to steal against Carolina or Tampa. Because in that second period, I mean, John Hines said it in the clip we played coming back. They were in the Nashville end the entire second period. Well, I mean, you can't steal that. Pecorine has done it a couple of times where the ice was tilted and he stole the game. But it doesn't happen very often, even for him. People forget about how good he was in Game 6 of the Cup Final, which they lost 2-0 to Pittsburgh. And it was really 1-0 and then an empty netter. And in that game, Pittsburgh had scoring chances. Rene was fantastic. He had been pulled after the first period in Game 5. And he came back in Game 6, and he was fantastic. And then they have the one puck go off the backboard, and Patrick Hornquist makes a play, and he puts it in the net, and now you're down 1-0, and you lose. But, I mean, he really stole that game. The Predators just didn't generate enough chances on their own in that Game 6. And then the one time they did, Colton Sisson scored, they blew the whistle before it went in the net. That's just an unfortunate situation. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back into your Preds thoughts today, but I cannot do 4 hours complaining about last night's loss because, quite frankly, I don't look at last night's loss as the end of the world. Now, were there some alarming signs? Yes. Is it something that is worth taking a look at, being a little concerned about? Yes. And will we keep doing that? Yes. But coming up next, NFL win-loss totals are out. I'm not sure how much I take into consideration what Vegas odds are this time of the year. But because you can bet it, and you know me, I'm going to use the FanDuel Sportsbook app, promo code JGM. But because you can bet it, I guess it makes it a little real. And there is an alarming trend every single year that I see that follows the Titans. And this year, somebody help me out with it. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company were delivered by TriStar, moving on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Fireball Cinema Whiskey goes down so smooth, and it tastes so great. There is no better way to celebrate that the weekend is here than with ice-cold Fireball Cinema Whiskey, especially if you've got like people coming into town or you're going to be hanging out with your friends or your buddies or something like that. Or even if your parents are making their first trip ever to Nashville, you should introduce them to ice-cold Fireball Cinema Whiskey. Probably not the first trip, but certainly a important trip. Fireball Cinema Whiskey goes down so smooth. Ignite the night. Please do it responsibly. Be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball Cinema Whiskey. Stillman & Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's also Free Beer Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. Who doesn't love free beer? Tune in all day long for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll be giving that away later today in the show. Caroline Fenton, BetMGM has their new win totals out for the 2021 NFL season. This is always fun when these come out. People look and say, oh, I like this one. I like that one. I remember last year during a pandemic, every little thing that came out like this, when there were no sports, I mean, no ball game last night to talk about, like we just spent the first 30 minutes of this show, like we would literally do an hour probably on the Titans win-loss total.
Well, that's when everyone was just starving for anything that resembled a ball on a field.
Sure. But you also had to figure out a way to come up with stuff just to fill the time. I mean, there's, and I would have never talked about it openly at the time and sat there and said this, but these are win-loss totals that come before the draft. So they'll tell you that they're all not set in stone or anything like that. And I would just tell you, I think win-loss totals are dumb anyways. I mean, unless you're literally at, you know, unless you've got it up on there right now and you're going to bet it. Like last year, the Ravens were like the hot team during the offseason of what the betting markets were telling you. I want to say they said when the Ravens schedule came out that the Ravens were going to be favored in all 16 games they played. Cool. And it's like, really, the Ravens? Like, did nobody expect a little bit of a drop-off after their big season? But so the win totals are out. Kansas City leads the way at 12. No surprise there. Tampa Bay, 11.5. Then it's Ravens, and of course the Ravens, the darlings of the win totals. Ravens, Packers, Bills, Browns, Rams. Here's what got my attention. Obviously, the first thing I'm going to look at is the Titans. And the Titans are at 9 wins. The Titans are there with the Dolphins, the Chargers, the Dallas Cowboys, who are perpetually overrated, and the Minnesota Vikings. The Titans are at 9. Indianapolis is at 9.5. Now, the Texans are at 4.5. That's worse than the league. Jacksonville is, I saw one had them at 6, 6.5. Make of it whatever you will with Jacksonville. I think we would both agree. The Texans are probably one of the worst, if not the worst team in the league, especially pending the Deshaun Watson situation.
Yes.
Jacksonville probably going to be improved with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback.
Rebuilding year.
But probably not much improved. Then there's Indianapolis. Every year, Indianapolis is ranked ahead of the Titans. I don't know why Indianapolis is always ranked ahead of the Titans, but they are. Even when Andrew Luck retires, they rank Indianapolis ahead of the Titans. Every single year. But I'm trying to figure out why Indianapolis would be ranked at 9.5 ahead of the Titans at 9. I would argue the Titans are a pretty safe bet at 9, considering that they've had at least 9 wins every season since 2016. Not only have they had 9 wins in every season since then, they get a 17th game this year. So even 9-8, which I think we would all consider to be a humongous disappointment and might land Mike Vrabel on the hot seat entering 2022, you still would win 9 games. But I keep bringing this back to the Colts. Why is Indy 9.5? What has Indianapolis done this offseason? We don't know what they're going to draft, but what have they done? Their starting quarterback retired. Their starting left tackle retired. One of their best defensive players, DeNico Autry, left in free agency. They brought back T.Y. Hilton, but he's still old. What did Indy do? They traded for Carson Wentz. And I keep wondering, and everybody seems to just assume Carson Wentz is going to round into true form playing for Frank Reich in Indianapolis. Is it possible that Carson Wentz does that? I think it's possible. But don't you think it's possible that Jared Goff turns back into what he was before he got his big contract and Sean McVay soured on him? Nobody hypes up Detroit. Is it possible that Sam Darnold, a former number 3 overall pick in the draft, isn't a complete and total bust, goes to an organization in Carolina where it looks like they have a coach who might know what he's doing, and Sam Darnold goes out there and maybe shows that he's a franchise quarterback? I think it's a possibility. Nobody's talking about it. Is it possible that Jameis Winston, who threw all these interceptions in Tampa Bay, goes into Sean Payton's offense, spends a year learning from Drew Brees, and actually produces like the former number 1 overall pick in the draft? It's possible, but nobody talks about it. But then get them started on Indianapolis, and oh, they'll tell you all about Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz hasn't had a good year in 3 seasons. People forget Derek Carr was once almost an MVP in 2016 before he got hurt. Nobody ever talks about Derek Carr for a championship now. Lewis Riddick was asked on ESPN the other day, who is the best team in the AFC or the team in the AFC most likely to knock off Kansas City? Lewis wasted no time going right to the Colts.
But I think it's going to be the Indianapolis Colts that are going to provide the greatest challenge to the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC, because they have a lot of things going for them right now as far as culture in Indianapolis, as far as personnel in Indianapolis. Now the question is whether or not Frank Reich and one person in particular, that being Carson Wentz, could go ahead and put and be the cherry on top of this great program that they're putting together there. Because if he can get himself right mentally, they do provide him with the kind of structure and support, but not enable him to try and circumvent the normal processes by which a quarterback should go through in terms of being a leader in an organization. But if they can get him on the right track, this team is very dangerous, because they have a great team building philosophy there, and they already have a great locker room with a lot of real good players, and I think they're set up for the long haul.
Okay, and everybody seems to say that about Indianapolis, but I'll say this. What have they done? I mean, Indianapolis, this program, Chris Ballard, he's been building this for a while. He's been building something special. That's something special he's been building. What have they done? They've won one playoff game without Andrew. No, they've won no playoff games without Andrew Luck. They got to a playoff game without Andrew Luck, but Phillip Rivers is gone. This idea of if they can get Carson Wentz back, they're building such a great thing. What are they building that's so special in Indianapolis? If you were to ask me, someone who's building something, and you'd say, okay, it looks like they're building something. The Chargers, they look like they're building something. Indy, we've been giving Chris Ballard and Frank Reich credit for building something for 4 years now. At some point, you got to go win some games. So what has Indianapolis done? You want to explain to me that Jacksonville has passed Houston this offseason? I'll say yes, just looking at the two offseasons. What has Indianapolis done to put themselves above the Titans this offseason other than Carson Wentz, who gets treated better than any quarterback-changing teams in the entire league? What have they done?
One thing that really confuses me is Mike Wells, the beat writer for the Colts for ESPN. He said, you know, he over-under on the Colts wins this upcoming season is 10. They went an 11-5 last season, and he said there's a little bit of a drop-off, not because they have a new quarterback, but because the schedule's a little bit tougher than last year. Are we just going to forget that the Colts have a completely new quarterback this year, and it's Carson Wentz? And TD said, you know, probably the over-under for the Titans is around 9.5 because we're a little uncertain of what the offense might do, taking into consideration that the Titans lost key aspects to their offense. So I don't understand why that same logic isn't necessarily being applied to the Colts.
I mean, before the draft, I can argue the Titans are not as good as they were last year.
I would agree. At this point, yes.
You can totally argue that. But I'm not going to argue Indy's better. To me, Indy is worse today than they were then. Like, I know that Phillip Rivers was an old peepop, but at least Phillip Rivers knew what he was doing.
He won 11 games.
You knew what you were getting with Phillip Rivers. You don't know what you're getting with Carson Wentz. And maybe it works out. I mean, nobody thought Ryan Tannehill would work out like it's worked out here. But, I mean, I just think just the people just, man, they just love the Colts. Every year, the Colts are ranked ahead of the Titans. Every year. And some years, I understand it. You know, 2019, they had Andrew Luck as their quarterback. They, at the end of the year, I think they went something like 7-1. They lost on the road in Kansas City. Fine. I get it. Like, that's a playoff team returning its core with a star quarterback in Andrew Luck. They don't have Andrew Luck anymore. Carson Wentz is not Andrew Luck. Frank Reich is not a quarterback whisperer until he gets Carson Wentz to play like Andrew Luck. Then I can tell you that you're a quarterback whisperer, but I can't do it now. And the other thing, too, about the schedule, I took the Titans schedule and I took the Colts schedule and I added it up. Each team plays Jacksonville twice, Houston twice. Each team plays. So the difference is Indy goes to Buffalo. The Titans go to New England. The Titans go to the Jets. Indy goes to Miami. But the real difference in the schedule, there's three real differences in the schedule. Tennessee goes to Pittsburgh. Indy goes to Baltimore. I say advantage Titans. Because I think Baltimore's better than Pittsburgh.
Correct.
Kansas City comes here. The Raiders go to Indianapolis. I say advantage Indianapolis. New Orleans comes here. Tampa Bay goes to Indianapolis. Advantage Tennessee. So in the three games of the schedule that are different, I think the Titans have the advantage on paper today in two of those three. But yet everybody just goes gaga for Chris Ballard and Frank Reich every year. And, you know, I like Frank Reich. I think he's a good coach. I think he's a good leader. Let's look at how he decided to start going for two and going for it on fourth down in that Buffalo playoff game. Maybe reverse some of those decisions and see what happens. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into this as well. 615-737-1025. Plus, there was a report. You know, stupid teams in the NFL do stupid things. And we know who the stupid teams are. But there was a report yesterday that literally floored me when I thought about a stupid team doing something stupid. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company right here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday on ESPN 1025 The Game. Let me tell you that ESPN 1025 The Game and T-Mobile are teaming up for a hockey home gating party. So later on in the show, you'll have your chance to text into the game text line for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Home Gate giveaway. A Dos Equis prize pack, including a case of beer, dessert from Nothing Bundt Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Stillman & Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 1025 The Game. So I don't want to steal Caroline Fenton's thunder here, but I do sometimes just look in the text line, see what's in there. You know, I mean, I still, have the ability to text into the text line.
It's a fun place.
So I don't want to steal this from you, but I am, because I saw, because I had to text a texter back. Sometimes I will read the text in the text line, and sometimes, especially if it's like, you know, you text in the 5 o'clock hour, or maybe I'll just text back, and if I leave a little dash JS, you know it's for me. Ben texts into the text line, Caroline, and says, reasons as to why Indianapolis could be projected higher has to do with them having the better roster, general manager, and an improvement at quarterback who already has a working relationship with his head coach over a 39-year-old Rivers who was on his last legs. Remember that even with old man Rivers, they nearly beat the Bills in the playoff game. When did all of a sudden Carson Wentz become better than Phillip Rivers?
And when did having an old quarterback be a bad thing? Didn't the Buccaneers win with a 75-year-old Tom Brady?
They did win with
an old quarterback. I know that he's Tom Brady, but still.
They did win with an old quarterback. Now, I'm not saying that, hey, winning with old quarterbacks are the way to go. I'm not. I mean, Rivers obviously was not in his prime last year. But Rivers in his prime is way freaking better than Carson Wentz. Old man Rivers is a safer bet than Carson Wentz. Now, you want to say Indianapolis has a better general manager, I'll take your word for it. But they've been trying for the last 4 years to find a quarterback. They tried Jacoby Brissett, and it was, They signed Phillip Rivers, and it was, Now they've traded a third-round pick this year and what will be a first-round pick next year in order to get Carson Wentz. John Robinson traded a fourth-round pick for Ryan Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill's better than Carson Wentz. So you guys can say whatever you want, but I think there's this idea, and I'm not saying that the texter is alone in having this, but there is this idea out there that Carson Wentz is better than he actually is. By the way, you know Phillip Rivers had a working relationship with Frank Reich from San Diego. It didn't make Phillip that much better. So I just say, okay, let's slow down. We're not talking about, you know, a renaissance for Jared Goff in Detroit. We're not talking about Jameis Winston. I find it more likely that Jameis Winston steps up his game in New Orleans than I do Carson Wentz steps up his game in Indianapolis. But them's the breaks. Time to take a look at the headlines. Caroline Fenton with the headlines.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company. Right here on Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
John Fulkerson is coming back.
How about that? UT basketball.
What do you think, if any, what kind of impact do you think that's going to make on the Vols season next year?
So I got to be honest with you, Madeline. You know, like, I look at UT's basketball team, and I think that the recruiting plus the return of John Fulkerson plus the fact that it looks like Scottie Pippen Jr. is not coming back to Vanderbilt. I mean, I think that there's going to be some real pressure on Rick Barnes. Yeah, I think there's going to be some real pressure to actually do well in the tournament this year. I don't think a Tennessee fan is going to be excited about being ranked sixth in the country when those first polls drop in October. I don't think they're going to be happy if Tennessee is a top 10 team for most of the season and gets bounced in the second round. I mean, I think there are some big expectations on Rick Barnes. This is the fun part of the year when you see news like that and you're like, yes, yes, yes. It's also a little uneasy when you get to February of next year and you have high expectations for your team and they're not met. I think Vol fans have kind of, this loss to Oregon State was probably the one where they stopped giving Rick Barnes the benefit of the doubt. I think Barnes is going to feel like he's at Texas again, where there's going to be some demands that he plays well. So it's good news for the Vols, but I think there's a lot of pressure on Rick Barnes this upcoming season.
I agree. I think that, you know, having a little bit of familiarity and having a lot of seniority on this team is going to make a big difference. But that being said, we thought that this past season was going to be a huge year for the Vols, and we saw what happened. Also, sticking on a Tennessee theme, I want you to guess how much a ticket for the Tennessee-Vanderbilt baseball game is.
I heard that they were like $200 on the secondary market or something like that. I mean, I'm excited for Vandy Tennessee baseball.
$330.
Apparently they've gone up.
Yes. Do you think it's worth the hype?
Well, I think, is that tonight's game or is it for the whole weekend?
I think a ticket throughout the series this weekend.
Because obviously tonight's different because tonight is Jack Leiter. So, I mean, look, you're talking about two top 10 teams. You know, it's funny because this is the only sport of consequence where Tennessee looks up to Vandy. You know, where Vandy has by far a much more, you know, superior program. And here come the Vanderbilt Commodores, and they're defending national champions. They're the number one team in the country. They've got Jack Leiter, the number one pick in the draft, going tonight. And here's Tennessee feeling good about themselves. I mean, this is a measuring stick game, a measuring stick series for the Vols. And in Knoxville, I think that this is proof for any football coach that, hey, if you win, they will be there for you, because they will be there. We are still, in theory, in a pandemic, and they are all in for this Vanderbilt series. I'm excited about Vandy Tennessee baseball this week. I think it's good to have both teams in the state be good at something and there be some sort of a rivalry. So I'm excited. Tonight's game, I think 6 o'clock on the SEC Network, Jack Leiter getting the ball. But, yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't pay $300 to go see it, but I would go. Like, if it wasn't a four-hour drive, I think I would go. I think it's worth going to. If the game were here, I think I'd be there.
Yeah, no, I agree. Interesting conversation today on Twitter. If you could choose one athlete ever to have an injury-free career from beginning to end, who would you choose?
So I saw this. Somebody said Grant Hill, and I thought that was a pretty good one. You know, I think, like, everybody wants a star player, because you say star player, you know, and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember this guy had. So I had a couple. One, Mark Pryor. You know, people forget the Chicago Cubs in 2003, they had Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood, and Mark Pryor was as good as any young pitcher. And he just mowed down the Braves in the playoffs. And I think he mowed down the Marlins for the most part in the playoffs. And then Mark Pryor was never the same. And he's certainly a guy that I would have loved to see his career play out if there were no injuries. I think Tracy McGrady, you know, there was a point in time where there was talk about, okay, is Kobe or McGrady going to be the guy who takes over for Jordan? And obviously it was Kobe. Kobe was relatively injury-free in his career. Tracy McGrady had back injuries. He had leg injuries. But Tracy McGrady was an excellent player. So it's hard to top Grant Hill, but I'll throw Tracy McGrady kind of into that mix. And then I've always thought, you know, in the NFL, one guy who I think never really got a fair shake because of all the injuries that they went through was Marcus. You know, I mean, Marcus Mariota had all this. I mean, Marcus Mariota, 26 touchdowns, 9 interceptions the second year. You thought he was onto something, breaks his leg at the end of the year against Jacksonville, has all kinds of injuries the next year, hamstring, shoulder, you name it. Then he's got the elbow injury in 2018 that was never the same. Not to say that Marcus would have been the franchise guy here or wouldn't have been the guy, but it would have been great to see him without the injuries. And so I do think, like, there are guys that are kind of off the radar. Rocco Baldelli played baseball. Great rookie year in Tampa Bay. Tons of injuries. Never made it. You're probably like, who are you talking about? But I think that's a great question.
Yeah, and I agree. I thought of Marcus Mariota as well, but I think for football, I had to go with RG3. I just think he had such an incredible career ahead of him and would have loved to see what would have happened.
I think that dynamic with him and Shanahan and Dan Snyder, and I think that that screwed it up just as much as anything.
Just more than, like, an injury?
I think so. I mean, I think that that was – I mean, look, he tore his ACL. I mean, everybody tears their ACL. Tannehill's torn his ACL. Like, Taylor Lewan's coming back off a torn ACL. We expect Taylor Lewan to be fine. Like, you know. So, to me, I would go, you know, I just don't think RG3 has the makeup to be a great NFL quarterback. I don't think he has the talent. I don't think he has the makeup. I don't think he has the skills. I just don't think he's good enough. But, boy, was he fantastic at Baylor. Those are Caroline's headlines. Good call, though, on the RG3 thing. 615-737-1025. I see phones loading up, so we'll probably get back into the phones coming up. We have all your texts to get to, both on the Predators and not on the Predators. What about last night's game, though? There was something about last night's game that made me say, you know what? 4-1, kind of dominated. Not the end of the world. I have a take on it. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 1025, the game.